I'm sure that we've each had situations where inclement weather or some other thing has disrupted something that we had planned, and we ended up changing our plans. The point is that along the road of life, there are many things that don't happen according to schedule, and we have to make adjustments. And how we make those adjustments determines how things turn out in the end. Mike Schlappe has degrees in financial planning and finance from BYU and from Arizona State University. He has his life and health license, his Series 7. He is a two-time gold medalist. He was recently inducted into the Utah Hall of Fame and was honored by Utah as one of its top 50 athletes of the past century. The story began with a tragic accident and has evolved into a lifetime of lessons and victories. We are fortunate to have our leadoff speaker be here with us. Please welcome Mike Schlappe.
Cinderella lived in a big hark douse with her two sistyugglers and her mean old mepstother. Are you catching on? We'll see. One day as she was flopping the moor, that's... her two sistyugglers came running in and said the prancing hints is throwing a fancy breast drawl and we're all invited, but gee, it's boo tad Cinderella, you just can't go. So thust about Jen, Cinderella went running in the kitchen with ears in her ties, that's... you guys are doing good. Just about ready to Chickasee a frickin', when all of a sudden there was a lightning flash flight, and standing in front of her was a beautiful berry. Cinderella said, you are who and what in the who do you want? The beautiful berry said, I'm your Mary Fodgother. It wasn't a Mary Fodgother, it was one of you all dressed up as her hairy godmother. Cinderella said, oh, Mary Fodgother, may I go to the fancy breast drawl? Her hairy godmother said, certainly. So instantly, Cinderella was transformed into a bavishing Rudy. She had on a long white Gatton sound, necklace of poopies and merles, rubies and pearls, and on her feet were two tiny sass glippers. And she was off. And soon she cast to the camel. That's came to the castle. And the first people she met were the two sistyugglers, but she was so beautiful, they didn't even cinderize Recognella. I worked hard to memorize this story. I don't have dyslexia or anything like that. They took her to the prancing hints. And he said, wow, may I have this hands, have this dance, for she is so beautiful. She reminds me of the beeping Slooty. He was just about ready to ask for her mare in handage when all of a sudden the stock clarted to strike 12 and Cinderella banned from the rawl. But as she was doing so, one of the tiny sass clippers flipped from her soot. So the prancing hints, he went over, he picked it up, said, as soon as I find out whose soot this flipper sits, I'll know with whom I have lolling and fuv. It's a love story. So the dairy vex nay, he went from house to house and from pillar to post, and those can't be turned around, but he wanted to find out whose soot the flipper sat. He came to Cinderella's house. He tried the flipper on the first sistyuggler, didn't dit. He tried it on the second sistyuggler. Again it. Very good. And then it was Cinderella's turn. We all know the flipper pitted perfectly and the prancing hints, and Cinderella were married and happy, lively ever after. What do we need to learn in this beautiful story? Never give up. Benjamin Franklin never gave up. Thomas Jefferson never gave up. Grant Taggart never gave up. BYU football, no. So always remember this simple little philosophy as you walk down the pathway of life. Even though some of our stubbles are trawl, some of our bubbles are trig, if we can't have any hubbles, how are we going to stroke wrong? So my friends here today, remember, if you're ever to fancy breast drawl, to slop your dripper. And don't try to memorize that story, because after a while you get all messed up and you start to stink that way. But Cinderella's life went from pathetic to perfect. Why? She never lost the thought that she had the potential to be a princess. When I was a young boy, I grew up about 2 hours south of here in a little community called Glenwood, a suburb of Richfield. And I was just, you know, I still am this tall, but I was just a little kid, and I'd wake up every day and I'd look out at these amazing mountains and these wide open spaces, and I knew in my soul that life was full of all these unlimited possibilities. My dad was a high school basketball coach. I was being primed by my dad to be this exceptional athlete. I moved up here to the beautiful orchards of Orem. I was now 15 years old. I was about 5 foot 10 inches tall. My best buddies were Roger and Phil and Doug. We'd listen to the Beatles, play sports, chase girls, and we were all looking forward to getting our licenses, not our investment licenses. And on this particular Friday, my best buddies, they were waiting for me out here at Lake Ridge Junior High School. The entire school and community, they were all excited about this championship football game the next morning. So I fixed my little sister Julie's flat bike tire. I ran down the street, I crossed the road, I jumped up the curb. I dashed through the grass. I bounced up on the cement porch. I was all excited. I started pounding on the old screen door. Tori, another friend and teammate, said, Mike, come on in. So I walked towards my friend's voice. I found him in his mom and dad's bedroom. Nobody was home. I plopped down on the white bedspread. I was facing south, this very direction. Tori started walking toward me, holding a gun in a brown leather case. Mike, I like to play around with this gun when my mom and dad aren't home. This is my dad's off-duty police gun. I know where he hides it when he goes to work. I sat there. He stopped 3 feet away from me, took the gun out of the brown leather case, flipped the cylinder that holds the bullets out to the side, started shaking it. I watched 4 little silver bullets fall right next to me on the white bedspread. I could have reached out and picked them up. I started doing math in my head. I got to 4 and I thought, I wonder how many bullets that gun does hold. I should have said something. This was an accident. My buddy Tori thought he had an empty gun. He pulled it up to his hip, pointed it at my chest. Bang! I still remember the sound. The bullet hit my chest, punctured my right lung, missed my heart, hit my spine, knocked me back onto that white bedspread. I passed out. Tori freaked out. I was regaining my consciousness. I was trying to breathe. I thought, this can't be real. My friends here today, these things are real, aren't they? Death, divorce, failure. And as I tried to take another breath, I thought, this is real. I've been shot. Can't breathe, my legs aren't working, I'm gonna die. I started bargaining with God. I was desperate. I just wanna live. If I can live, I'll change, I'll be a better person. I'll help as many people in this world as I can. I promise, I just wanna live. I passed out again. And then the next thing I remember, I was regaining my consciousness and I saw this blue phone on the wall about 8 feet away from me and I wanted to get to that blue phone. Why? My amazing mom was 5 houses away, but I was glued to that white bedspread. I couldn't get there. Tori came running in from the kitchen. He hovered over me, got a hold of my shoulders. Mike, you're faking it, you're faking it. I know you're faking it. I pulled at my shirt, showed him the hole in my chest. He ran back over to that blue phone I couldn't get to. He called my home telephone number. My mom answered. Mrs. Shalapi, come quick. Mike's been hurt. He threw the phone in the corner. He ran back in the kitchen. The next 2 minutes were the longest 2 minutes of my life. But I hung in there. Why? I had hope that my mom would walk in that bedroom. And she did. She touched my hand. She touched my face. She ran her fingers through my hair. I think my mom saved my life. Before I go any further, I have a gut feeling there's a couple of moms in this room. I want you to know you matter. You make a difference. My mom ran back over to that same blue phone. She called 911. Can you imagine how my friend's dad felt? He's cruising the neighborhood in his police car. It came across his radio. There'd been a shooting at his address. So he shows up. They rush me down to the hospital over here in Provo. They pull me out of the back of the ambulance. The body is an amazing creation, isn't it? You know what saved me besides my mom, my friend, the doctors and nurses? My heart. My heart was on an inbeat. That very split second, the bullet sped by. They left it in my spine. I spent 8 days in intensive care, all kinds of pain, tubes in my nose and into my lungs, local newspaper said, boy shoots himself. Father leaves loaded revolver on nightstand. Star athlete, student body president clinging to life. My football teammates dedicated the game to me the next morning, 36-0. They lost. My girlfriend dumped me 3 days later. You know, I laid there, I had a lot of time to think and wonder. You know, I should have bought a disability policy or, you know. No, but I didn't know what my future held, but I knew this. I wasn't raised to quit. My nickname as a little kid was Happy Shillappy. My wife calls me Crappy Shillappy. But I just had to figure out a way to adjust and change and do things different. Tori even showed up, my friend that shot me. Sat right next to me. We looked at each other. We both started crying. He handed me a book. I opened it up on the inside left cover. It said, Mike, I will never forgive myself. But I hope someday you will. I recognized right then, this didn't just happen to me, did it? This happened to my family, my friends, the entire community. I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you there were days I wanted to reach over there, pull the plug out of the wall, and end it all. Why didn't I? Good people like you. My friends would pack the elevators. My mom and dad would sleep at the hospital. My grandma Shillappy even brought me a cherry Slurpee from 7-Eleven. 9 o'clock at night, drank half of it, put the remainder on the nightstand by the hospital bed, went to sleep. Nurse came in, checked my blood pressure, stuck a thermometer in my mouth, left the room. I was 15 years old. I needed something to smile about. What do you think I did? Took that thermometer out of my mouth, stuck it in the last half of that cherry Slurpee. Sat there for 20 minutes, got nice and cold. I heard the nurse coming back down the hallway just before she came in the hospital room. I took the thermometer out of the Slurpee, put it in my mouth, acted like I hadn't moved. She walked in the room, over to the side of the hospital bed, leaned over, pulled this thermometer out of my mouth. She looked at it and got all nervous and hysterical. Why? This little thing that doesn't lie said I was... Yeah, 30 degrees ago, and I got in trouble. I got in trouble, but I laughed for the first time in a week, and that meant everything to me. I started to love myself from the inside out, not just the outside in. The average person in this room has 11 negative thoughts to every one positive thought. I was probably twice that at that point. By the way, I'm not here this morning to make anybody feel guilty. It is absolutely okay to have a bad day once in a while, isn't it? But I have a challenge for all of us. Don't let bad days turn into bad weeks and bad months. You know why? You hang your head, you think you're no good, you think you don't matter. Every single person in here is a good person just because you're alive. I had to learn to love myself from the inside out. The average person in here spends 45 to 50 minutes a day looking good for the world on the outside. Well, some of you guys a little bit less. I mean, but on average, no. But I spent 5 months in rehab, and I laid there, and I'd touch that bullet that was still in my back, and I'd think about all the things I'd lost. I'd work up a sweat just trying to make my big toe flinch. My ninth grade teacher, Mr. Paul Gordine, he would bring my homework to the rehabilitation center twice a week. I got straight A's that quarter of that semester that I got shot. I started to understand the power of the mind and the heart and the spirit. I wondered if I could ever get a job. I mean, would you hire me? See, that's why I had to go into motivational speaking. Which, by the way, is ranked as the sixth most overpaid profession, right after financial consultants and agents. I mean, just right, you know, right there. But I just laid there, and I wondered if girls would ever like me again. Now I live in Draper. I've got 5 kids. I got a couple wives, you know, Utah. But I had to change. In life, if you resist change, you fail. If you accept change, you survive. If you actually create change, you succeed. Different isn't bad, it's just different. I was shifting, I was starting to think differently. I remember the first time I transferred. I have a little chair up here. I'm going to quickly demonstrate a transfer. I remember as a 15-year-old kid, they said, Mike, you got to be able to transfer into that car. And I thought, yeah, if I can't get in that car, I can't go on a date. If I can't go on a date, I can't get girls. If I can't get girls, I might as well pull the plug out of the wall. But so basically, you put your
you hook your right foot in, you hook your left foot in, and you transfer. Now,
no big deal. But when 2/3 of your body's paralyzed, it is a big deal. But I knew in the hospital, I had to go back to the basics. And if I couldn't do these simple little things, I couldn't move on in life. And I have a little secret for everybody in here. If you want to be a good friend, if you want to be a good spouse, a good agent, help other people feel comfortable in your world. But if you want to be a great friend, if you want to be a great spouse, a great agent, get into their world. I'm thankful I had people like my 11-year-old sister, Julie, who literally got into my world. I went home, and my dad, he provided that kick in the butt that I needed when I kind of wanted to just sit around and take advantage of this wheelchair. I went in the backyard. I shot a basket up at the 10-foot basketball hoop. It fell 5 feet short. I was bummed out. My dad knew it, and he said, "Mike, you can still be a great athlete. You're just going to have to do it a little differently." I found out they had wheelchair basketball in the Olympic Games. I set a goal when I was just 16 years old to be the first wheelchair basketball player to represent our great country in 4 consecutive games. In life, if you don't know where you're going, you won't know how to get there. My mom, she'd be in the kitchen crying every morning, flipping pancakes. I'd roll in there. We'd cry. She'd talk to me. One day she said, "Mike, just because you can't stand up doesn't mean you can't stand out." It became my life motto. It meant everything to me. I sit here in front of you as a person. I used to be able to do 10,000 things. Now I can only do 9,900. I can't do dishes, toilets, laundry. I even got out of piano lessons because I couldn't play that little pedal thingy. Yeah. It's almost worth getting shot for, but so anyhow, hang on here, sorry, I'm going to have 2 disabled mics up here, but so thank you. So I'd go to the high school basketball games over here to Orem High School. My brother Scott's a year older than me, and he's in our industry too, and he lives in Mesa, but he'd be out there playing in front of the whole student body, and I wanted to be out there with him. Where was I? Sitting in the wheelchair section, crying through the whole game. I'd have these labels: disabled, different, handicapped, strange. I knew I needed to find some new passions. I started running marathons. Any runners in here? Yeah, these 26-mile marathons. And my first race was July 24th, 1981, the Deseret News Marathon, halfway between Salt Lake City and Park City. 5 o'clock in the morning, me and 7 other dudes in our racing chairs, they let us go first so we won't be in the way. We're 3 miles into the race, and I was struck. Hey, I got a little ramp here. Okay, so pretend this is the race, all right? So first 13 miles are uphill, and I'm 3 miles into the race. I'm starting to get blisters. I'm starting to sweat. FUD's getting in my head. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. But I kept my eye on the sky. I kept pushing. And then they let all the ABs go. That's you, the able-bodied people, okay? So I'm pushing along. All the ABs are passing me on the uphill. This runner in a yellow shirt, he ran by, he smacked me on the shoulder. "Good job, Mike. Don't quit. You're an inspiration." I kept pushing. I thought, thanks. Shut up. Wait till the downhill. Then there was the downhill. Picture this, 500 runners looking over their shoulders, seeing 8 guys in wheelchairs coming at them at 45 miles an hour. I haven't passed yellow shirt. What do you think I thought? "Good job. Yeah, don't quit. You're an inspiration. I'll see you at the finish line." I got to the finish line, and everybody's clapping, and that felt good. I had this thought. I thought, wait a minute. Everyone was clapping 3 hours ago when I took off. Now they're clapping at the end. What about that 26 miles in between? It was just me, the hot sun, the hot road, my wheelchair. You know what I learned that day? All motivation is self-motivation. Love, money, fear can motivate us, but we have to get our rear ends out of bed in the morning and be thankful to be alive. I never appreciated my legs till I lost their use. But I crossed that finish line of that race, and I had my head up, my shoulders back. I thought, my dad's right. I can still be a great athlete. I'll just have to do it a little differently. My friends here today, I don't know most of you. I look out at this great audience. I'm a pretty smart guy. I have a gut feeling there's a little pain in this room besides just my wheelchair. I salute every one of you for getting up every day, trying to make a difference out in the world while dealing with your own pains and your own problems. You want to know the secret to pain? But when you have pain, if you attach a purpose or a meaning, I promise you it makes all the difference. I'd been in a wheelchair for 2 years. I had a new girlfriend. I'm a junior in high school. Life's good. I'm just getting used to this new world of mine. I'm arm wrestling my weightlifting coach. He was strong. I was stubborn. We're doing our thing. He busted my right arm. My funny bone went all the way up into the palm of my hand. Wasn't funny. Back to the hospital here in Provo. More, you know, same doctors and nurses. More surgery. A big blue cast from here to here. Now I had four limbs and only this one worked. I went in circles for 4 months. But something more important happened in the hospital. They flipped me over, sliced open my back, took that little 38 caliber piece of lead out of my spine. They handed it to me that day. I held it in the palm of my right hand. I looked at it, and I just started shaking. Because this little piece of lead symbolized so much loss and heartache in my young life. But I can sit here today and tell every one of you it's about the time in my life that I let it go. I forgave my friend. If you can ask forgiveness and forgive others and forgive yourselves, you'll have enough character and courage to do anything you need to do. It was a turning point for me. I got the lead out. I've been sitting on my butt for 35 years, so you won't sit on yours. My friend Tori, we cared about each other. We'd hang out. We were neighbors. We'd go to the mall. We'd go out to movies. People would come up, Mike, what happened to you? He shot me. It was awkward. Well, Tori moved away about a year later, got involved in drugs and alcohol up in Salt Lake City, tried to rob a bank with a loaded gun. My friend Tori spent 25 years in federal prison, many of them in Fort Leavenworth. But I had this prayer in my head and in my heart to reconnect with my good friend Tori. 2 years ago, I was at a restaurant. My cell phone rang. I knew that voice. It was Tori. He was 5 miles away. He'd been out of prison for 5 years. I talked him into coming to that restaurant. He walked in there. Two cool guys went to shake hands. He knelt down right to the side of me, and we embraced. And it was like a bridge had been built over those many years. I'm proud of my friend Tori. Tori teaches all of us that attitude is not a mood. You can be in a crappy mood and have a great attitude. Attitude is position. Position, financially, socially, spiritually, emotionally, physically. Attitude is a position. My friend Tori has his attitude, his position proper. And I'm proud of him. Well, one Friday night, I wasn't taking personal responsibility in my life. I was sitting on a green couch out in the house out there in Orem, out by UVU, feeling sorry for myself. A school dance was going on. Why didn't I go to school dances? I didn't want girls to feel eh. So I stayed home. Well, this particular night, I mustered up the courage. I climbed in my wheelchair, down that new ramp, out of the front of the house, over into my car, threw my wheelchair in the back seat, drove to the high school with my little hand controls, parked in the handicapped parking stall, you know, some advantages. And I went up the ramp, I went into the dance. You know, you've been, the lights are low and the wooden floor and the baskets. A dance is going on. I found this red brick wall and I popped a wheelie and I'm sitting up against the wall, you know, kind of wishing things were how they used to be. You know, kind of proud of myself for showing up. By the way, thank you for showing up here. You're gonna have a great time for a couple of days. A few of my friends came and said hi to me as I was at the dance, and then they were back to chasing girls. Then I saw this girl named Wendy start walking toward me. I thought, don't even think about it, Wendy. She kept getting closer and closer. This wasn't good. So I got out of a wheelie, turned to the side, kind of started talking to the top of my shoes, But I could, you know, still see her legs getting closer and closer, and that wasn't all that bad. But she got about 10 feet away, and I looked up, and our eyes made contact, and she said, "Mike, I want to dance." I thought, well, go for it. I mean, I'd be happy to watch you. Go dance. And I knew she meant with me. I said, "Okay, Wendy." I'm pushing out on the dance floor, and the whole world's staring at me, and I felt like wearing a shirt. I got shot. What's your problem? And, you know, I'm thinking, this isn't very much fun. Why'd my friend shoot me? I'm having a bad day. And I got out there, and I just started dancing with an attitude. It's like, I even popped a wee there. I remember, turned a circle. I couldn't wait for the song to end. It finally did. I tried to shake Wendy's hand and go back to my safe corner. Wendy said 6 words I will never forget. "Mike, I want one more dance." Oh. What kind of music do you think started coming through the speakers? Slow music. I didn't know what to do. And, you know, everybody's hugging and twirling and geeking, and Wendy's nervous, and I was sweating bullets, no pun intended, but it was awkward. And so, eventually, Wendy came over, and she knelt down on the ground right next to me. I started patting her on the head to the beat of the music. "This isn't working. I'm messing up your hair. But I have an idea. Why don't you just sit on my lap? We'll try that." So she stood up, plopped down sideways on my lap, wrapped her arms around my shoulders. I quickly became the envy of every one of my friends. The song ended. Wendy went to her corner. I went to mine. Now I had a smile on my face, a smile on my heart. I was thankful I showed up, but I was more thankful for a 16-year-old girl named Wendy. No, I didn't marry Wendy. A 16-year-old girl named Wendy who understood what makes this world go around. And you know what it is? Nope, not annuities. It's love. It's caring. It's compassion. Wendy could have danced with Roger or Phil or Lance, but I'm thankful she took a chance to dance with me. This world is made of givers and takers. The takers eat well, the givers sleep well. I hope every one of you sleep well, because I know what you do. I know you're givers. I know you matter. I know we belong to a noble profession. You deserve to sleep well. Wendy made a difference in my life. We went to school dances for the next couple of years. We took a negative, we made it a positive. All my friends would bring my extra wheelchairs to the school dances. I think we know why. Well, I told you about a goal I set when I was 16 to represent you in the Olympic Games. I got my chance. 1988. The Summer Games were in Seoul, South Korea. I tried out against 100 of the best wheelchair basketball players in the United States of America, and I made the team. I was so excited. I was the youngest on the team. These are great athletes, like Reggie Colton. My teammate, he's a double amputee from Gainesville, Florida. Lost both of his legs on a train track when he was 11 years old. So we're in San Francisco, and we're all excited to be getting on the airplane. We're the first ones on the plane. They tell us to remain seated. Okay. Reggie, like a spider monkey, he climbs up in the overhead luggage bin. My coach shuts him in there. We start reading the newspaper. All the ABs like you start coming on the airplane. What's the first thing you're looking to do when you get on the airplane? Yeah, somebody opens that up, and you think paraplegics have bladder problems. It scares somebody. So we fly over the ocean. We represent our great flag. We beat Holland by 10 points. They raised the flag, played the national anthem, put the gold medals around our necks. I had a tear in my eye because I remember 10 years earlier laying in a hospital bed right here in Provo, Utah, wondering if I would ever play basketball again. Now I had this shiny gold medal, and I was sharing it with my family and friends. It's a good feeling to know you're the best in the world at something, even for a small moment. My mom liked my shiny gold medal so much, she was going to bronze it. Come with me to 1992. Where were the Summer Games? Barcelona, Spain. My personal motto as I trained was no pain, no Spain. Again, I made the team. Again, we beat Holland. The flag was raised, the national anthem. The gold medals were put around our necks. Where is that gold medal here today? I don't have it. I lost it. I lost my gold medal. How? One of my teammates tested positive for drugs. I had to give it back. Don't feel bad for me. Just know this. Every single thing we do here on this team in financial services affects everybody else on the team. So two games and two gold medals. I've learned in life you don't find out who you are when the sun is always shining. You find out about your character when there's some adversity. All right, come with me to 1996. Where were the summer games? Atlanta, Georgia. The best wheelchair basketball team ever put together. We'd never lost. We're playing in front of, our fans and our food and, 15,000 people in the Omni. Life's good. We're in the semifinals. We're playing Australia. We got beat. We didn't know how to handle adversity. Everybody's retreating to the locker room. Coach was mad. Coach was yelling. Coach was chucking wheelchairs. Some of us were still in those wheelchairs. We got knocked down. We got up the next night. We got ourselves positioned properly. We beat Spain by 9 points to win a bronze medal. I didn't like my bronze medal. I came back here to Utah. I stuck it in my sock drawer. And there it sat for 4 years as a motivator for me to try to reach my goal. Now, I'm getting older, kids working, getting up in the morning, doing push-ups, swimming, trying to shoot some baskets. But I didn't lose sight of my goal. The year 2000 rolled around. Where were the summer games? Sydney, Australia. I made the team. Now I was the oldest on the team, and I was so excited to go back and reclaim a gold medal. We're down there in the beautiful country of Australia, and we get to the semifinals. We're playing Canada. Looking forward to the gold medal game the next night. We got beat again. Everybody's retreating to the locker room. Coach is mad. I had changed. I'd grown up. I sat in the middle of that basketball court for 4 or 5 minutes. I reflected what a privilege it had been to represent you and over 300 million Americans in what I believe is the greatest sporting event in the world. I was able to do that over the course of almost 20 years. And don't get me wrong, we had a bad day, but we got ourselves positioned properly. And the next night, we beat Great Britain on a 25-foot shot at the buzzer to win the bronze. We didn't lose the gold. We won the bronze. And I didn't come back here to Utah and throw it in my sock drawer. I brought it here with me this morning. And I'll hold it up, and I'll tell you that I like my bronze medal. Third place in a world of 7 billion people isn't really too bad. My mom doesn't have to bronze it. Michael Phelps doesn't even have any of these. So I have been blessed to win 2 gold medals and 2 bronze medals. I don't have any silver medals. Those guys lose their last game. But these are, symbols of excellence. And they mean a lot to me, and I really worked hard for them. And I earned them with great coaches and, teammates and family and friends. I have one other item I want to put around my neck. And I want to let it take an equal place in my life with these medals. This other little item I earned in a little bit of a different way, a lot of doubt and fear, a lot of heartache and tear. It's about the size of the tip of your little finger. Any ideas what this is? This is my bullet. And it spent 2 years in my spine. And I can now hold it in the palm of my right hand. And I don't shake. I accept it. It's part of me. It's closed a few doors, opened some others. But today isn't about me. I have a favor to ask of you. Tonight, when you lay your head on your pillow and you know you're an amazing person, which you are, will you find your bullet? It doesn't mean you're weak. It means you're strong. It might not be in your spine, you know, like mine. It might be in your head or in your heart. I promise you, it's worth the journey. Be willing to put your bullet around your neck and let it take an equal place in your life with your successes. Again, I salute every one of us. We get up every day and we deal with disabilities. We deal with death. We deal with debt, doubt, disease, depression, the in-laws. I mean, all these things, Dallas Cowboys, all these D words, but, you know, we have to stay focused. All right, I'm going to take you on a little bit of a visual journey, show you some fun photos. We'll kick the lights down a little bit, and I might need your help here. This is wanting to go to that first slide with the clicker here. If not, I may have to have somebody just sit next to it, and I'm... Many years ago, laying in a hospital bed, I had a lot of bad hair days and a lot of time to think. And I got a lot of great therapy in the hospital. The greatest therapy I received, I gave to myself. I called it attitude therapy. I'd read good books and, you know, memorize poems and all kinds of things to stop myself from going rock bottom. This is one of them. Success is overcoming that person inside of you that wants to quit. This is a different marathon. I wrecked at mile 20. I finished the last 6 miles on a flat. Down here at Utah Lake, my wife's driving the boat. I'm hanging on for dear life. A smooth sea never made a skilled sailor. The Uinta Mountains, a bunch of Boy Scouts carried me up to the top of the tower, and they tied a whole bunch of ropes to my wheelchair, and I said, can we tie some to me too? And so they did, and, you know, I'm still 50 feet in the air, no stomach muscles, scared, trying, you know, I thought I was going to fall off the side, and I thought, what the heck, I'm already in a wheelchair, I'll just keep going. So I made it to the bottom. This guy's parachuting, obviously, had courage, missing his legs from the knees up, and the knees down. Yeah, you can't be missing your legs from the knees up or you got problems. But they don't sell policies for that, do they? But our minds are like parachutes. They only work when they are open. When you leave here in the next day or two, I hope that we will think or act or feel a little differently than when we showed up. This is my buddy Aaron in Vegas, 360 at a skate park. I love the outdoors. Fishing's one of my passions. You know, Cal Welling's going to take me fishing one of these days up in Alaska. But this is out on a little trip. You know, life is intense. But I just love getting out in the outdoors. All right. If there's a will, there's a way. Snowmobiling, one of my passions. A couple hours south of here, up in the Fairview Mountains, on this very mountain 5 years ago, my left leg went under the snowmobile, broke my ankle in 16 places. Back up here to the hospital, more surgery, another big blue cast, 5 months, hauling that thing around, still walking with a little bit of a limp, but I'm doing better. Scuba diving's fun. It's not good for the wheelchair. Only if we're willing to lose sight of the shore can we discover new horizons. Down at the family farm in Fairview, my brother Tyler got in the backhoe, picked me and my other buddy in a wheelchair up, dumped us in the pond. Everybody needs a bucket list, but Tyler carries me lots of places. This is down in San Diego. He put me on his back, carried me down to the ocean and down by the beach, dug a hole, buried me up to my neck. A half an hour later, I said, get me out of here. I've had enough of this. What did he do? He started throwing chips and bread all around my head. And you're only seeing one pigeon, but all the birds showed up and they wouldn't leave. El Capitan, Yosemite, a 3,000-foot granite cliff. My friend, my teammate, Trooper Johnson, wanted to climb this since he was a little boy. Well, he broke his back when he was 17. He got in a car wreck. Slept on that red thing 4 different nights, packed his gear behind him, CNN, took pictures from a helicopter. And when he got to the top, he walked 2.5 miles back to the bottom on his hands. It's my wife, Tammy, from the beautiful state of Minnesota. She's a great person. My sister, Colette, introduced us. We live up in Draper. Sometimes she gets mad at me and hangs me up in the backyard. So I do my yard work. I jump on the riding lawnmower. Last summer on a hot August day, the darn thing ran out of gas. No cell phone, nobody around. My wheelchair's way over there. You know, people drive by. I'd wave at them. You know, they'd wave back. Good job, Mike. Don't quit. You're an inspiration. I'm like, get over here. I need some help. So I crawl over and climb back in my wheelchair. I was fortunate to carry the Olympic flame in Salt Lake City. This is 5 months after 9-1-1, so there's all kinds of patriotism. 3.5 billion people are watching. It was a magical evening, 35 degrees. I have a little video clip here.
Monaco.
Monaco.
Back when George was smiling, I was able to meet cool people like Sting and the Dixie Chicks. It's okay, we're learning about forgiveness. We can let it go here today. Oh, and yeah, fellow Utah, Marie Osmond, a little bit of country, you know, lost 50 pounds on Nutrisystem. And over there, for you ladies, a lot of rock and roll, Bon Jovi from the great state of New Jersey. And these are my favorite people in the world. My wife, Tammy. My son Matt's above my head, he's in college, and Megan, my blonde daughter, she's a freshman in college. Joseph over there in the corner goes to Alta High School, he's a musician. Anna, our little supermodel, in between us, she doesn't take out the garbage cans. She gave me a Father's Day card, said, Dad, enjoy today, because tomorrow it's back to being all about me. And then Mackenzie's down here in the corner, but you know what, see that photo? Not a person in that photo knew me when I was on my feet, except me. And I appreciate every one of them, accepting me, my wheelchair, and all my other disabilities. After all, isn't this why we all do what we do? Yeah. We have fun as a family, love trampolines. Trooper has a hat on. He climbed El Capitan. The other athlete over there, that's my tall teammate, Reggie, that I told you about that lost his legs on the train track. That's Reggie on the airplane. Wait, go back one. Go see Reggie there? Yeah, back when Delta used to have pillows. But watch out for Reggie when you fly home. I was fortunate to carry the Olympic flame in St. George, Utah, as it made its way up towards Salt Lake City. I carried it for, you know, 2 blocks, big smile on my face. You know, the kids are going nuts. You're thinking, don't drop it, they'll cancel the Olympics. And you know, you've got to hand it to somebody else. I wanted to hand it to my mom. Why? My mom nominated me. My mom has MS. I handed it to some other person with different pains. Everybody in here has a torch to carry. Grab your torch, hang on tight, carry it. I promise you it's worth it. Playing basketball in the World Championships in Canada, that's my coach above my head, yelling, don't shoot. I shot anyway. Shot happens. That's the name of my new book. This is after we won the gold in Barcelona. They lowered the baskets down. We cut the nets off to celebrate. They raised the flag, played the national anthem. 20 minutes later was the drug test. Had to give our gold medals back. This is the world's largest basketball hoop in Peoria, Illinois. They put me on a forklift, lifted me up there. My legs are hanging. It's like, where's Waldo? Can you find me in that photo? I'm holding up an orange basketball. These are some of my disabled friends at the White House, Trooper and Mark. This is my other disabled friend that used to be at the White House. His name's Bill. Any ideas who this is? It's my friend Tori. Good-looking guy, huh? This is at a restaurant in Salt Lake City. I'm proud of Tori. This is the opening ceremonies in Sydney. My final games, 110,000 people in that beautiful stadium. I'm down there in the red, and then they say, let the games begin. And I watch amputees run the 100 meters in 11 seconds, or high jump 7 feet. Or long jump, you know, where you fly in the air, land in the sand, 24 feet. I think the fake leg flies off ahead and, you know, goes and lands in the sand. This is not Reggie's a shot putter. Another attitude therapy. Pain and suffering are inevitable. Misery is optional. This guy's big shoulders, big arms, a big heart, no legs. 17,000 of us cheered for him as he tried to win a gold, silver, or bronze medal for his country. I like elevators. but I like escalators better. I back on. I hang on. You know what I've noticed, though? There's nobody ever behind me. They just scatter and disappear. This is after we won the bronze medal. Who do you think's upside down on the bottom? I have a little video clip here for you. It's a tie game. Great Britain
Bun
has the ball.
Trapped up top.
Oh, that's good.
Bun trapped up top. Down low. Dan Johnson springs free. The shot no good. Rebound Waller. They're trying to get a timeout. Barber runs it up to Schulte. 2 seconds remain. Schulte for the win. He got it!
One of those magical moments in life. The Canadians went on to win the gold medal. This is the best player in the world. He climbed up on the basket and giving us Americans a hard time. And, you know, he cut the net off and cut his legs off. And I had to tell him he couldn't put his shoe on. But this is Pat Anderson from the great country of Canada. And this is the last slide I have here for you today. Let me just, first of all, thank you for listening to a part of my life story. You know, when my grandma Shalappi brought me that cherry Slurpee, she taught me to laugh again. My dad taught me I could still be a great athlete. Wendy and my wife taught me that it's love that really matter. Tori taught me we need to forgive ourselves, reposition, and move forward. But the greatest lesson I learned in life, I learned from my amazing mom when she reminded me that just because I can't stand up doesn't mean I can't stand out. My friends here today, I want to finish my remarks, and I want to speak to you just very briefly as if I were our flag. What do I think our flag would say if it could speak to us here this morning? I've been able to represent our flag all over the world. It's been places that many of us can only imagine. I hope the rest of your life, when you see a flag, it might be a reminder or a representation, if you will, in the value that there is in taking a stand for something worthwhile. So what do I think our flag would say? I am your flag. I was born on June 14th, 1777. I am more than just cloth shaped into a design. I am the refuge of the world's oppressed people. I am the silent sentinel of freedom. I am the emblem of the greatest sovereign nation on earth. And I am the inspiration for which American patriots give their lives and fortunes. I've led your sons into battle from Valley Forge to the steaming, treacherous jungles of Vietnam, into Afghanistan and Iraq. I've walked in silence with each of your honored dead to their final resting place beneath silent white crosses, row upon row. I have flown through war and peace, strife and prosperity. And amidst it all, I have been respected. My red stripes symbolize blood spilled in defense of our glorious nation. My white stripes signify burning tears shed by Americans who have lost their sons or daughters in battle. My blue field is indicative of God's heaven under which I fly. And my white stars clustered together unify 50 states as one. For God and country. Old Glory is my nickname. Proudly, I wave on high. Honor me, respect me, defend me with your lives and fortunes. Never let my enemies tear me down from my lofty position, lest I never return. Keep alight the fires of patriotism. Strive earnestly for the spirit of democracy. Worship the eternal God and keep his commandments. And I shall always remain a bulwark of peace and freedom for all mankind. My friends here today, I lost the freedom to walk. I've had people ask me if I could go back to that day and change it, would I? My first thought is yes. But then I think, and if you had seen what I'd seen, if you had been where I'd been, if you knew what I knew, and most importantly, if you'd felt what I'd felt, I thank God for pain. Because only when you feel pain do you change. And only when you change do you grow. And only when we grow do we all begin to discover the beauty, that lies within every one of us in this room. I promised when I was laying on that white bedspread, if I could live, I would help as many people in this world as I could. I'm here for a reason this morning, just a little simple reminder that in life, whether or not you can or you can't stand up, we all have the ability to stand out. Thank you very much for letting me share my story here with you today. Thank you.